Welcome to The Mildly Interesting with Oliver Wilson, the official bedtime podcast of former insomniacs. Tomorrow is Thursday, November 18th, Apple Cider Day. Apple cider is a raw, unfiltered, non-alcoholic beverage that's made from apples. In other places it's called hard cider, but in the US, cider generally refers to the alcoholic variety. Fresh apple cider is made from unpasteurized apple juice and remains raw and natural, without any added sugar. When apple cider begins appearing on shelves, the holiday season is around the corner. You may or may not like the taste of apple cider, but have you ever wondered about its history? Well, I have. And I think you might just find it mildly interesting. Subscribe to The Mildly Interesting on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are available. We'll be right back. Apple cider, also called sweet cider, soft cider, or simply cider, is the name used in the United States and Canada for an unfiltered, unsweetened, non-alcoholic beverage made from apples. Though typically referred to simply as cider in the United States, it is not to be confused with the alcoholic beverage known as cider in other places, which is called hard cider in the US. It is the liquid extracted from an apple and all its components, that is then boiled to concentration. The liquid can be extracted from the apple itself, the apple core, the trimmings from apples, or apple culls. It is typically opaque due to fine apple particles in suspension and generally tangier than commercial filtered apple juice, but this depends on the variety of apples used. Cider is typically pasteurized to kill bacteria and extend its shelf life, but untreated cider is common. In either form, apple cider is seasonally produced in autumn. It is traditionally served on the Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and various New Year's Eve holidays, sometimes heated and mulled. Although the term cider is used for the fermented alcoholic drink in most of the world, it refers to fresh apple cider in the United States. Hard cider is used there instead for the alcoholic drink. In Canada, the fresh variety is usually referred to as apple cider, with cider generally referring to the alcoholic variety. While some states specify a difference between apple juice and cider, the distinction is not well established across the US. Massachusetts makes an attempt to at least differentiate fresh cider and processed apple juice, according to its Department of Agricultural Resources. Apple juice and apple cider are both fruit beverages made from apples, but there is a difference between the two. Fresh cider is raw apple juice that has not undergone a filtration process to remove coarse particles of pulp or sediment. Apple juice is the juice that has been filtered to remove solids and pasteurized so that it will stay fresh longer. Vacuum sealing and additional filtering extend the shelf life of the juice. This still leaves unfiltered apple juice that is no longer raw in a gray area, presumably cider but not labeled as such. The addition of sweeteners or reconstitution from concentrate is left even grayer. Canada recognizes unfiltered, unsweetened apple juice as cider, fresh or not. Historically, all cider was left in its natural state, unprocessed. In time, airborne yeasts present on apple skins or cider-making machinery would start fermentation in the finished cider. Left on its own, alcohol would develop and forestall the growth of harmful bacteria. When modern refrigeration emerged, cider and other fruit juices could be kept cold for long periods, retarding fermentation. Any interruption of the refrigeration, however, could allow bacterial contamination to grow. Outbreaks of illness resulted in government regulation requiring virtually all commercially produced cider to be treated either with heat or radiation. As a result, natural raw cider is a specialty seasonal beverage, produced on site at orchards and small rural mills in apple growing areas and sold there, at farmers' markets, and some juice bars. Such traditional cider is typically made from a mixture of several different apples to give a balanced taste. Frequently blends of heirloom varieties such as winesap, once among the most sought-after cider apples for its tangy flavor, are used. The US government requires that unpasteurized cider and juice have a warning label on the bottle. Even with refrigeration, raw cider will begin to become slightly carbonated within a week or so and eventually become hard cider as the fermentation process continues. Some producers use this fermentation to make hard cider, others carry it to acetification to create artisanal apple cider vinegar. Many commercially produced ciders are pasteurized, which extends their shelf life. The most common method used is pasteurization, but UV irradiation is also employed. Pasteurization, which partially cooks the juice, results in some change of the sweetness, body, and flavor of the cider. Irradiation has less noticeable effects. The impetus for federal level regulation began with outbreaks of E. coli O157H7 from unpasteurized apple cider and other illnesses caused by contaminated fruit juices in the late 1990s. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, made proposals in 1998, Canada began to explore regulation in 2000. The US regulations were finalized in 2001, with the FDA issuing a rule requiring that virtually all juice producers follow hazard analysis and critical control points, HACCP, controls, using either heat pasteurization, ultraviolet germicidal irradiation, UVGI, or other proven methods to achieve a 5-log reduction in pathogens. Canada, however, relies on a voluntary code of practice for manufacturers, voluntary labeling of juice cider as unpasteurized, and an education campaign to inform consumers about the possible health risks associated with the consumption of unpasteurized juice products. Modern cider making has come a long way from early forms of production that involved a man or horse-powered crusher. These consisted of a stone or wood trough with a heavy circulating wheel to crush the fruit, and a large manual screw press to express the juice from the pulp. Straw was commonly used to contain the pulp during pressing, later replaced by coarse cloth. The Palmer Brothers Company, of Cos Cob, Connecticut, made the most popular modern rack and cloth press from the mid-1800s to the mid-1900s, when production shifted to Esco in Massachusetts. As technology advanced, rotary drum scratters came into use. Today, nearly all small pressing operations use electric hydraulic equipment with press cloths and plastic racks in what is commonly called a rack and cloth press, and electric hammermill breakers. Depending on the varieties of apples and using the optimal extraction methods, it takes about one-third of a bushel, 10 liters, to make a gallon, 3.78 liters, of cider. Apples are washed, cut, and ground into a mash that has the consistency of coarse applesauce. Layers of this mash are then either wrapped in cloth and placed upon wooden or plastic racks where a hydraulic press then squeezes the layers together, or the mash is distributed onto a continuous belt filter press, which squeezes the pulp between two permeable belts fed between a succession of rollers that press the juice out of the pulp in a continuous, highly efficient operation. The resulting juice is then stored in refrigerated tanks, pasteurized to kill bacteria and extend shelf life, and bottled and sold as apple cider. The juice may also be fermented to produce hard cider, which then may be further treated by exposure to acetobacter to produce apple cider vinegar, or distilled to produce apple brandy. The waste left after pressing, known as pumice, is sold for cattle feed. Hot mulled cider, similar to wassail, is a popular autumn and winter beverage. Cider is heated to a temperature just below boiling, with cinnamon, orange peel, nutmeg, cloves, or other spices added. Authentic sparkling cider is a naturally carbonated beverage made from unfiltered apple cider. Sparkling apple juice, often confused with it and sometimes even labeled as sparkling cider, as does the popular Martinelli brand, is filtered, pasteurized, and mechanically carbonated and thus not true cider. Rosé apple cider can be obtained using red-fleshed apple crabs. Cider donuts traditionally used the yeast in raw cider as a leavener. Today they are sometimes sold at cider mills and roadside stands, though there is no assurance natural cider is used. Visiting apple orchards in the fall for cider, donuts, and self-picked apples is a large segment in agritourism. Apple cider is the official beverage of the U.S. state of New Hampshire. When we return, pasteurization. Pasteurization is a process in which packaged and non-packaged foods, such as milk and fruit juice, are treated with mild heat, usually to less than 100 degrees Celsius, 212 degrees Fahrenheit, to eliminate pathogens and extend shelf life. The process is intended to destroy or deactivate organisms and enzymes that contribute to spoilage or risk of disease, including vegetative bacteria, but not bacterial spores. The process was named after the French microbiologist, Louis Pasteur, whose research in the 1860s demonstrated that thermal processing would deactivate unwanted microorganisms in wine. Spoilage enzymes are also inactivated during pasteurization. Today, pasteurization is used widely in the dairy industry and other food processing industries to achieve food preservation and food safety. By the year 1999, most liquid products were heat treated in a continuous system where heat can be applied using a plate heat exchanger or the direct or indirect use of hot water and steam. Due to the mild heat, there are minor changes to the nutritional quality and sensory characteristics of the treated foods. Pascalization or high pressure processing, HPP, and pulsed electric field, PEF, are non-thermal processes that are also used to pasteurize foods. The process of heating wine for preservation purposes has been known in China since AD 1117 and was documented in Japan in the Diary to Monin Nikki, written by a series of monks between 1478 and 1618. Much later, in 1768, research performed by Italian priest and scientist Lazzaro Spallanzani proved a product could be made sterile after thermal processing. Spallanzani boiled meat broth for 1 hour, sealed the container immediately after boiling, and noticed that the broth did not spoil and was free from microorganisms. In 1795, a Parisian chef and confectioner named Nicolas Appert began experimenting with ways to preserve foodstuffs, succeeding with soups, vegetables, juices, dairy products, jellies, jams, and syrups. He placed the food in glass jars, sealed them with cork and sealing wax, and placed them in boiling water. In that same year, the French military offered a cash prize of 12,000 francs for a new method to preserve food. After some 14 or 15 years of experimenting, Appert submitted his invention and won the prize in January 1810. Later that year, Appert published La de conserver les substances animales et végétales, The Art of Preserving Animal and Vegetable Substances. This was the first cookbook of its kind on modern food preservation methods. La Maison Appert, English, The House of Appert, in the town of Massy, near Paris, became the first food bottling factory in the world, preserving a variety of foods in sealed bottles. Appert's method was to fill thick, large-mouthed glass bottles with the produce of every description, ranging from beef and fowl to eggs, milk, and prepared dishes. He left air space at the top of the bottle, and the cork would then be sealed firmly in the jar by using a vise. The bottle was then wrapped in canvas to protect it while it was dunked into boiling water and then boiled for as much time as Appert deemed appropriate for cooking the contents thoroughly. Appert patented his method, sometimes called appertization, in his honor. Appert's method was so simple and workable that it quickly became widespread. In 1810, British inventor and merchant Peter Durand, also of French origin, patented his own method, but this time in a tin can, so creating the modern-day process of canning foods. In 1812, Englishmen Brian Donkin and John Hall purchased both patents and began producing preserves. Just a decade later, Appert's method of canning had made its way to America. Tin can production was not common until the beginning of the 20th century, partly because a hammer and chisel were needed to open cans until the invention of a can opener by Robert Yates in 1855. A less aggressive method was developed by French chemist Louis Pasteur during an 1864 summer holiday in Arbois. To remedy the frequent acidity of the local aged wines, he found out experimentally that it is sufficient to heat a young wine to only about 50 to 60 degrees Celsius, 122 to 140 degrees Fahrenheit, for a short time to kill the microbes, and that the wine could subsequently be aged without sacrificing the final quality. In honor of Pasteur, this process is known as pasteurization. Pasteurization was originally used as a way of preventing wine and beer from souring, and it would be many years before milk was pasteurized. In the United States in the 1870s, before milk was regulated, it was common for milk to contain substances intended to mask spoilage. Milk is an excellent medium for microbial growth, and when it is stored at ambient temperature, bacteria and other pathogens soon proliferate. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control, CDC, says improperly handled raw milk is responsible for nearly three times more hospitalizations than any other foodborne disease source, making it one of the world's most dangerous food products. Diseases prevented by pasteurization can include tuberculosis, brucellosis, diphtheria, scarlet fever, and Q fever. It also kills the harmful bacteria Salmonella, Listeria, Yersinia, Campylobacter, Staphylococcus aureus, and Escherichia coli O157:H7, among others. Before industrialization, dairy cows were kept in urban areas to limit the time between milk production and consumption, hence the risk of disease transmission via raw milk was reduced. As urban densities increased and supply chains lengthened to the distance from country to city, raw milk, often days old, became recognized as a source of disease. For example, between 1912 and 1937, Some 65,000 people died of tuberculosis contracted from consuming milk in England and Wales alone. Because tuberculosis has a long incubation period in humans, it was difficult to link unpasteurized milk consumption with the disease. In 1892, chemist Ernst Lederle experimentally inoculated milk from tuberculosis-diseased cows into guinea pigs, which caused them to develop the disease. In 1910, Lederle, then in the role of Commissioner of Health, introduced mandatory pasteurization of milk in New York City. Developed countries adopted milk pasteurization to prevent such disease and loss of life, and as a result, milk is now considered a safer food. A traditional form of pasteurization by scalding and straining of cream to increase the keeping qualities of butter was practiced in Great Britain in the 18th century and was introduced to Boston in the British colonies by 1773, although it was not widely practiced in the United States for the next 20 years. Pasteurization of milk was suggested by Franz von Soxhlet in 1886. In the early 20th century, Milton Joseph Rosenau established the standards, i.e. low temperature, slow heating at 60 degrees Celsius, 140 degrees Fahrenheit, for 20 minutes, for the pasteurization of milk while at the United States Marine Hospital Service, notably in his publication of The Milk Question, 1912. States in the U.S. soon began enacting mandatory dairy pasteurization laws, with the first in 1947, and in 1973 the U.S. federal government required pasteurization of milk used in any interstate commerce. The shelf life of refrigerated pasteurized milk is greater than that of raw milk. For example, high temperature, short time, HTSD, pasteurized milk typically has a refrigerated shelf life of 2 to 3 weeks, whereas ultra-pasteurized milk can last much longer, sometimes 2 to 3 months. When ultra-heat treatment, UHT, is combined with sterile handling and container technology, such as aseptic packaging, it can even be stored non-refrigerated for up to 9 months. According to the Centers for Disease Control, between 1998 and 2011, 79% of dairy-related disease outbreaks in the United States were due to raw milk or cheese products. They report 148 outbreaks and 2,384 illnesses, with 284 requiring hospitalization, as well as 2 deaths due to raw milk or cheese products during the same period. Medical equipment, notably respiratory and anesthesia equipment, is often disinfected using hot water, as an alternative to chemical disinfection. The temperature is raised to 70 degrees Celsius, 158 degrees Fahrenheit, for 30 minutes. Pasteurization is a mild heat treatment of liquid foods, both packaged and unpackaged, where products are typically heated to below 100 degrees Celsius. The heat treatment and cooling process are designed to inhibit a phase change of the product. The acidity of the food determines the parameters, time and temperature, of the heat treatment as well as the duration of shelf life. Parameters also take into account nutritional and sensory qualities that are sensitive to heat. In acidic foods, pH less than 4.6, such as fruit juice and beer, the heat treatments are designed to inactivate enzymes, pectin methylesterase and polygalactonase in fruit juices, and destroy spoilage microbes, yeast and lactobacillus. Due to the low pH of acidic foods, pathogens are unable to grow. The shelf life is thereby extended several weeks. In less acidic foods, pH greater than 4.6, such as milk and liquid eggs, the heat treatments are designed to destroy pathogens and spoilage organisms, yeast and molds. Not all spoilage organisms are destroyed under pasteurization parameters, thus subsequent refrigeration is necessary. Food can be pasteurized in two ways, either before or after being packaged into containers. When food is packaged in glass, hot water is used to lower the risk of thermal shock. Plastics and metals are also used to package foods, and these are generally pasteurized with steam or hot water since the risk of thermal shock is low. Most liquid foods are pasteurized using continuous systems that have a heating zone, holder tube, and cooling zone, after which the product is filled into the package. Plate heat exchangers are used for low viscosity products such as animal milk, nut milk, and juices. A plate heat exchanger is composed of many thin vertical stainless steel plates which separate the liquid from the heating or cooling medium. Scraped surface heat exchangers contain an inner rotating shaft in the tube, and serve to scrape highly viscous material which might accumulate on the wall of the tube. Shell or tube heat exchangers are designed for the pasteurization of foods that are non-Newtonian fluids, such as dairy products, tomato ketchup, and baby foods. A tube heat exchanger is made up of concentric stainless steel tubes. Food passes through the inner tube, while the heating/cooling medium is circulated through the outer or inner tube. The benefits of using a heat exchanger to pasteurize non-packaged foods versus pasteurizing foods in containers are: heat exchangers provide uniform treatment, and there is greater flexibility with regards to the products which can be pasteurized on these plates. The process is more energy efficient compared to pasteurizing foods in packaged containers. Greater throughput. After being heated in a heat exchanger, the product flows through a hold tube for a set period to achieve the required treatment. If pasteurization temperature or time is not achieved, a flow diversion valve is utilized to divert the underprocessed product back to the raw product tank. If the product is adequately processed, it is cooled in a heat exchanger, then filled. High temperature short time, HTSD, pasteurization, such as that used for milk, 71.5 degrees Celsius, 160.7 degrees Fahrenheit, for 15 seconds, ensures the safety of milk and provides a refrigerated shelf life of approximately 2 weeks. In ultra-high temperature, UHT, pasteurization, milk is pasteurized at 135 degrees Celsius, 275 degrees Fahrenheit, for 1 to 2 seconds, which provides the same level of safety, but along with the packaging, extends shelf life to 3 months under refrigeration. Direct microbiological techniques are the ultimate measurement of pathogen contamination, but these are costly and time-consuming, which means that products have a reduced shelf life by the time pasteurization is verified. As a result of the unsuitability of microbiological techniques, milk pasteurization efficacy is typically monitored by checking for the presence of alkaline phosphatase, which is denatured by pasteurization. Destruction of alkaline phosphatase ensures the destruction of common milk pathogens. Therefore, the presence of alkaline phosphatase is an ideal indicator of pasteurization efficacy. For liquid eggs, the effectiveness of the heat treatment is measured by the residual activity of alpha amylase. During the early 20th century, there was no robust knowledge of what time and temperature combinations would inactivate pathogenic bacteria in milk, and so several different pasteurization standards were in use. By 1943, both HTSD pasteurization conditions of 72 degrees Celsius, 162 degrees Fahrenheit, for 15 seconds, as well as batch pasteurization conditions of 63 degrees Celsius, 145 degrees Fahrenheit, for 30 minutes, were confirmed by studies of the complete thermal death, as best as could be measured at that time, for a range of pathogenic bacteria in milk. Complete inactivation of Coxiella burnettii, which was thought at the time to cause Q fever by oral ingestion of infected milk, as well as of Mycobacterium tuberculosis, which causes tuberculosis, were later demonstrated. For all practical purposes, these conditions were adequate for destroying almost all yeasts, molds, and common spoilage bacteria, and also for ensuring adequate destruction of common pathogenic, heat-resistant organisms. However, the microbiological techniques used until the 1960s did not allow for the actual reduction of bacteria to be enumerated. Demonstration of the extent of inactivation of pathogenic bacteria by milk pasteurization came from a study of surviving bacteria in milk that was heat-treated after being deliberately spiked with high levels of the most heat-resistant strains of the most significant milk-borne pathogens. The mean log 10 reductions and temperatures of inactivation of the major milk-borne pathogens during a 15-second treatment are: Staphylococcus aureus greater than 6.7 at 66.5 degrees Celsius, 151.7 degrees Fahrenheit. Yersinia enterocolitica greater than 6.8 at 62.5 degrees Celsius, 144.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Pathogenic Escherichia coli greater than 6.8 at 65 degrees Celsius, 149 degrees Fahrenheit. Chronobacter sarcosarchii greater than 6.7 at 67.5 degrees Celsius, 153.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Listeria monocytogenes greater than 6.9 at 65.5 degrees Celsius, 149.9 degrees Fahrenheit. Salmonella serre, Typhimurium greater than 6.9 at 61.5 degrees Celsius, 142.7 degrees Fahrenheit. A log 10 reduction between 6 and 7 means that one bacterium out of 1,106,000 to 10,107,000 bacteria survive the treatment. The Codex Alimentarius Code of Hygienic Practice for Milk notes that milk pasteurization is designed to achieve at least a 5 log 10 reduction of Coxiella burnettii. The code also notes that the minimum pasteurization conditions are those having bactericidal effects equivalent to heating every particle of the milk to 72 degrees Celsius for 15 seconds, continuous flow pasteurization, or 63 degrees Celsius for 30 minutes, batch pasteurization, and that to ensure that each particle is sufficiently heated, the milk flow in heat exchangers should be turbulent, i.e. the Reynolds number should be sufficiently high. The point about turbulent flow is important because simplistic laboratory studies of heat inactivation that use test tubes, without flow, will have less bacterial inactivation than larger-scale experiments that seek to replicate conditions of commercial pasteurization. As a precaution, modern HTSD pasteurization processes must be designed with flow rate restriction as well as divert valves which ensure that the milk is heated evenly and that no part of the milk is subject to a shorter time or a lower temperature. It is common for the temperatures to exceed 72 degrees Celsius by 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Celsius. Pasteurization is not sterilization and does not kill spores. Double pasteurization, which involves a secondary heating process, can extend shelf life by killing spores that have germinated. The acceptance of double pasteurization varies by jurisdiction. In places where it is allowed, milk is initially pasteurized when it is collected from the farm so it does not spoil before processing. Many countries prohibit the labeling of such milk as pasteurized but allow it to be marked thermized, which refers to a lower temperature process. Because of its mild heat treatment, pasteurization increases the shelf life by a few days or weeks. However, this mild heat also means there are only minor changes to heat labile vitamins in the foods. According to a systematic review and meta-analysis, it was found that pasteurization appeared to reduce concentrations of vitamins B12 and E, but it also increased concentrations of vitamin A. Apart from meta-analysis, it is not possible to draw conclusions about the effect of pasteurization on vitamins A, B12, and E based merely on consultation of the vast literature available. Milk is not an important source of vitamins B12 or E in the North American diet, so the effects of pasteurization on the adult daily intake of these vitamins is negligible. However, milk is considered an important source of vitamin A, and because pasteurization appears to increase vitamin A concentrations in milk, the effect of milk heat treatment on this vitamin is not a major public health concern. Results of meta-analyses reveal that pasteurization of milk leads to a significant decrease in vitamin C and folate, but milk is also not an important source of these vitamins. A significant decrease in vitamin B2 concentrations was found after pasteurization. Vitamin B2 is typically found in bovine milk at concentrations of 1.83 mg/L. Because the recommended daily intake for adults is 1.1 mg/day, milk consumption greatly contributes to the recommended daily intake of this vitamin. Except for B2, pasteurization does not appear to be a concern in diminishing the nutritive value of milk because milk is often not a primary source of these studied vitamins in the North American diet. Pasteurization also has a small but measurable effect on the sensory attributes of the foods that are processed. In fruit juices, pasteurization may result in the loss of volatile aroma compounds. Fruit juice products undergo a deaeration process before pasteurization that may be responsible for this loss. Deaeration also minimizes the loss of nutrients like vitamin C and carotene. To prevent the decrease in quality resulting from the loss in volatile compounds, volatile recovery, though costly, can be utilized to produce higher quality juice products. In regards to color, the pasteurization process does not have much effect on pigments such as chlorophylls, anthocyanins, and carotenoids in plants and animal tissues. In fruit juices, polyphenol oxidase, PPO, is the main enzyme responsible for causing browning and color changes. However, this enzyme is deactivated in the deaeration step before pasteurization with the removal of oxygen. In milk, the color difference between pasteurized and raw milk is related to the homogenization step that takes place before pasteurization. Before pasteurization, milk is homogenized to emulsify its fat and water-soluble components, which results in the pasteurized milk having a whiter appearance compared to raw milk. For vegetable products, color degradation is dependent on the temperature conditions and the duration of heating. Pasteurization may result in some textural loss as a result of enzymatic and non-enzymatic transformations in the structure of pectin if the processing temperatures are too high as a result. However, with mild heat treatment pasteurization, tissue softening in the vegetables that cause textural loss is not of concern as long as the temperature does not get above 80 degrees Celsius, 176 degrees Fahrenheit. Other thermal and non-thermal processes have been developed to pasteurize foods as a way of reducing the effects on nutritional and sensory characteristics of foods and preventing degradation of heat-labile nutrients. Pascalization or high-pressure processing, HPP, pulsed electric field, PF, ionizing radiation, high pressure homogenization, UV decontamination, pulsed high intensity light, high intensity laser, pulsed white light, high power ultrasound, oscillating magnetic fields, high voltage arc discharge, and streamer plasma are examples of these non-thermal pasteurization methods that are currently commercially utilized. Microwave volumetric heating, MVH, is the newest available pasteurization technology. It uses microwaves to heat liquids, suspensions, or semi-solids in a continuous flow. Because MVH delivers energy evenly and deeply into the whole body of a flowing product, it allows for gentler and shorter heating, so that almost all heat-sensitive substances in the milk are preserved. Low temperature, short time, LTSD, is a patented method that implies spraying droplets in a chamber heated below the usual pasteurization temperatures. It takes several thousandths of a second to treat liquid products, so the method is also known as millisecond technology, MSD. It significantly extends the shelf life of products, 50 plus days, when combined with HTSD without damaging the nutrients or flavor. LTSD has been commercial since 2019.